You're listening to the Hello World podcast, number 92. My name is Sean Wildermuth, and I'm your host. Hello World podcast is where you can hear from some of your favorite developers, authors, and speakers about how they got started in this business and the decisions they made along the way. We go way back to their first computer, their first code experience, and their first job. With this episode, it only leaves 7 episodes left. Oh my God, just 7 episodes. We're finally going to end the podcast after 100 episodes. The last episode will be Richard Campbell interviewing me about how I got started. I can't wait for you to hear it. Decided not to have a sponsor for the podcast, but if you'd like to support the podcast and the other things that I do, feel free to visit my Pluralsight courses at seanw.me/psauthor, including my newest course on best practices in ADO.NET and ASP.NET Core, entities, validation, and view models. On today's show, we have Michaela Hutchinson. Michaela works on .NET at Microsoft. She's been working on .NET developer tools for more than a decade, including Xamarin and Visual Studio for Mac, and is passionate about user experience and inclusivity. In her free time, she enjoys game development, gardening, and silversmithing. In this episode, we talk with Michaela about how she got started, and also about how her degrees apply to the work on developer tools at Microsoft. Let's take a listen. So, Michaela, you're out in Seattle at the Microsoft Home Ship, is that right?
No, I'm in Cambridge over on the East Coast.
Oh, okay. My old stomping grounds, actually. That's awesome. Have you always worked there?
Yeah, I moved to Boston about 13 years ago, straight out of college, and I stayed. I initially thought I'd be coming out here for like a year or two, and it turned into a little bit longer.
Were you confused about which Cambridge you were moving to?
No.
That's my own little joke. Sorry. So is this something you pursued in college because you got an interest early on, or did this just something that happened in college that you wanted to, you know, do code and programming?
It started before that. I think I was probably about like 11 or so when I first started playing around with BASIC on my parents' old BBC Micro.
Oh, wow.
Which was technically a little bit older than me, I think.
I was going to say, you don't seem old enough to have even heard of a BBC Micro.
Yeah, so I was interested in programming kind of just on the side as a hobby throughout my teens. Found a few practical uses like doing homework and stuff. But I didn't actually consider pursuing it as a career. I went to university for physics.
Oh, nice.
Ended up writing my master's on astrophysics.
So exactly what you expected to do was work at Microsoft in another country. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, things just kind of happened. It was in the end of my second year of college. The Google Summer of Code program started, and I applied to work with the Mono project to build a drag and drop ASP.NET designer for Linux. And I did that and I enjoyed it. And the next year I applied again and built ASP.NET support for Mono develop. Some of that code still exists in Visual Studio for Mac.
Oh, nice. And so were you part of the acquisition of Xamarin and all that? Or was that, because I know they've yes, always been down there.
Yes, I was. So when I was leaving college, Miguel reached out to me and offered me a job. And almost the entire team at that time was remote, but I didn't want to work remote straight out of college. So the only place where they had like any presence at all was in Cambridge. So that's how I ended up.
Over. That's a great start.
Yeah.
That's a great start. Do you find yourself the languages you sort of started with, obviously a lot of C#, since you did a lot of Mono stuff, is that really where your heart is? Or are you one of these people who just wants to try every sort of language that's out there?
I'm kind of interested in most things, but I've definitely fallen in love with C Sharp. I've written non-trivial amounts of C++ and Python in the past. But yeah, I just really like the balance that C Sharp strikes, being like not too high level, not too low level. But I do like knowing like how the low level stuff works, so I can drop down when I need to.
Oh, that's exactly sort of where I'm at. I came from a background with a lot of languages that no one's ever heard of anymore, but sort of landed on C Sharp. So because of where your role is and how you got started right out of college, do you have any problems with sort of imposter syndrome or worrying about any of that since your degree isn't in computer science?
Not really. Some of the best people I've worked with didn't study computer science, so that wasn't really a concern for me. I guess I've always been I've had an aptitude for programming, so that definitely gave me some confidence that not everyone would have. I've definitely experienced imposter syndrome in other ways, but not around code.
And I'm going to ask what might be an inappropriate question, but I got the impression that you were trans. Is that correct?
Yep, that is correct. I came out.
Is that something you're comfortable talking about on the podcast?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I came out about 4 years ago in a pretty public way. I felt like I would have very much liked to go stealth and just like have people not know that I was trans, but I felt like I was just so far into my career and social circles and so on that I didn't want to kind of reset all of that. And I felt that the environment that I was in would be relatively supportive, and it did turn out to be. So I guess I've been very lucky in that regard.
That is a challenge, whether you're in tech or not tech. So it's a brave thing to do.
Oh yeah, it took me a long. I struggled with it for about 15 years before I actually came out. So
yeah, that's not entirely surprising. I'm not sure you're aware. I made a movie about diversity in software development, and we ended up not using some of the content we had about the trans community, just because we only had so much time in the film. But it's something that there's several high profile people in tech and tech reporting that are trans, and I've always been really curious on whether you worried about when you were coming out, what the effect on the other people around you, whether the acceptance, or whether any of those relationships would change just because of this thing that maybe they didn't know about before and that they frankly shouldn't care about. But that's not always how it works.
Yeah, it was definitely something that worried me. By the time it came out, it worried me a lot less than it would have long before. Like at some point, I just kind of reached a point where I kind of didn't really care. Like, that's not really quite the right way to put it, but it's like, I felt like I didn't really have a choice, so I just had to kind of live with whatever happened.
Yeah. Be true to yourself, as it were.
Yeah. And the other thing was just there being so many trans folks in the software industry, it seems, or at least so many visible trans folks in the software industry, because there are actually trans folks all over who you probably would have no idea.
Of course.
But yes, for some reason in the software industry, there seem to be a lot of people who are open about the fact they are trans, and that visibility, that representation, definitely seeing that people respected them for their expertise and seeing that they didn't have major visible problems, at least, definitely gave me confidence that I could follow their example, I guess.
That's great to hear, because unfortunately, I am the old white guy in the old white guy industry, and so sometimes I'm concerned about how our industry is seen from a perspective that I just don't have. Moving back to your career, I wanted to talk about mentors. Did you have people early on that really helped you figure out, you know, what you wanted to do and how you wanted to do it? Maybe back in the Google contests or even in college?
I haven't really. There are definitely folks I've learned a lot from. Yeah, I've definitely. So in my second summer of code, that was the first time I'd ever worked on a real code base, like an existing large code base. And my summer of code mentor, Luis Sanchez, was he gave me the feedback and support and advice that I needed. And yeah, I learned all about like code review and working on a large project and working with source control and bug triaging and like all that kind of stuff in a very hands-on way. And so I'm very grateful for that experience. I think that was one of the things that really convinced me that I did want to go into software professionally.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And then over the years, like I've worked with Miguel for pretty much that whole time. And I've definitely learned a lot from him. It's never been like a formal mentoring relationship. But I think a lot of mentoring relationships aren't formalized. You know, they're just like you
wanting to follow what you see. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone who you learn from.
And Miguel's such a great person to do that because, you know, he has no ego there for some reason. Like, I think I'd have a problem with my ego if I were him, but he just doesn't seem to have any. So you talked about, you know, this experience of working with the mentor where you saw like what code really looked like in the code reviews and dealing with large code bases. What did you think coding was before then? Did that really, because that seems like the way you described it, that it changed your mind of what the day-to-day job of coding looked like. So I'm curious of what your thought pattern was about what it was before then.
Yeah, I'm not sure I really knew what it was. Well, let me restate that. I'm not sure I really had solidified my thoughts about programming before that. Like, it was a tool. It was something that I would sometimes use as a tool and sometimes do for fun. But it was very much either I was using it as a tool to solve a problem that wasn't programming, or it was something that I was doing purely as a hobby for fun because I found interesting. And the idea of working on software that I didn't necessarily care about was, I don't know, I've always been very passionate about the things that I work on. And what I found out during those Summer of Codes was that I really like building tools that other people can use. And that, yeah, I don't think I'd ever want to work on any other kind of software, but that's a fairly broad brush.
It is. Working on tools, I worked on tools many years ago, is very rewarding, but also, frankly, we can be some of the worst users in the world. It's sort of a double-sided sword, or whatever the phrase is. I'm butchering.
Yeah. It's also interesting working on software tools specifically, because it's like we like our customers are just like us.
Yeah.
So it helps us to empathize with them and helps them to empathize with us. So in general, I think that's a good thing. But there is also sometimes that leads some of them to think they know more about our job than we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly.
which is not so great when someone comes to you with a solution for a problem and says you should do it this way. And you're like, well, but that would affect these 19 other things that you have no idea about. And
right.
You need to find some way of solving the overall issue rather than just this specific isolated thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've certainly been guilty of that before, of like, what do you mean you're not building it just for me? At Pluralsight, where I do a lot of training, there's a lot of discussion about how all the teachers would build the Pluralsight website, which is, you know, just getting 500 really bright people without any view into the actual code base of how they would have done it, and that would have been better. And it's always been an interesting thing to watch that.
Oh my goodness. That sounds like chaos, honestly.
Yeah. I like to watch from the outside. Hopefully I haven't been too guilty of that. So in your experience working in the U.S., but obviously not being born here, has that been a challenge to sort of acclimate to not just the computer, you know, culture, like working with people? And you know, I'm pretty sure that it's a pretty diverse group, both at Xamarin and now that you're with Microsoft, but the like logistics of what it's like to live in a country that is similar and different in so many ways to where you grew up.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't actually sure what to expect before I came here, because all I'd really seen was movies and TV, and I'd never actually been outside Europe when I moved here. And my first impression was just that everything was bigger, like the buildings, the roads, the cars, just like everything had been scaled up a little bit, or I'd been shrunk down a little bit. It was a very strange feeling. That was something I didn't expect at all. And then there was the aspect that it kind of felt a little bit like speaking a foreign language. Like there were words I would have to be aware that I had to use a different word. Like I would have to talk about the sidewalk instead of the pavement, ounce, tomato, tomato, or people literally wouldn't understand what I was saying. So I had to be very aware of that. And it was interesting, the point at which it became automatic and I started having to make that effort when I go back to the UK.
I love the Mark Twain quote that the United States and Great Britain are two countries divided by a common language.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true.
I used to have a British partner, and because we both speak English, presumably, we thought we could understand each other. But of course, you know, once you get comfortable with someone and idioms and slang, and oh my God, it can be a nightmare. I'm sure you've experienced that over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I would just assume that someone knew a certain idiom, and they'd go like, "What on earth?" Like, that makes no sense. Why would you say that?
Exactly. Exactly. So one of the questions I like to sort of round out in the end of the interview is, if are there any decisions along the way in your career that you think you wish you had taken a different road, or had made a different decision, or taken an opportunity that you didn't, or vice versa? And no is an appropriate answer. We get no a decent amount, but it's something I'm always curious about.
Yeah, I really don't think I would change any of my career decisions. There are definitely life decisions I would change, but
sure.
career decisions in general, I feel like I've been very lucky in that they've all worked out. And looking back at all the decisions I've made, I absolutely chose the right answer in all cases. Now, that's not to say that if I'd taken an early branch, I'd have gone off into a completely separate set of decisions that would have ended up somewhere much better. So I guess it's kind of like local. Well, it's kind of, it's with, yeah, it's very much a restricted problem space. But
yes, absolutely. And while I have you in this very particular time of the coronavirus and all that, have you had to change the way you worked at Microsoft? I assume they've sent you to work in your home office. Is that something new for you where you're at?
So I haven't actually personally had to change that much because back in November, I switched over to the .NET PM team. So there's pretty much no one in the Cambridge office now who I kind of need to work with on a daily basis, which means it's very easy to just decide to work from home and save an hour of commuting. So I had generally been working from home like 3 or 4 days a week. I do like to, you know, meet people and get out the house and
of course, and
catch up and all that. But it's definitely saving that time, and it's attractive. I'm not sure it's good for me, honestly. I definitely feel a lot better when I'm spending time around other people. So this kind of long enforced period of quarantine isn't so great. But in some ways, I feel like I'm actually getting more contact with a lot of people because people are setting up like voice chats and virtual party games and like all that kind of stuff with people who I really didn't hear from much at all before the virus.
Yeah, it's been an interesting time. I normally go out of my house every day to work at a coffee shop that I've been going to for a decade or more. And once I couldn't do that, it was a very strange experience. But a few days ago, some of the people that hang out there started a group, like a Zoom meeting. Oh. They just turn on and people come and go and we chat. It's remarkable. Like, I didn't realize exactly how much I was getting out of just talking about, you know, bullshit with people. Mm-hmm. You know, wasn't even people I worked with. It was just, you know, people who watched the same shows I did or had an opinion about, you know, what's going on in Atlanta or knew about a new band, you know. All of that fed me way more than I thought it did.
Yeah, we are very much social creatures, and I think this quarantine is difficult for everyone, really.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate the time and hope you have some good virtual parties coming up, and hope this all passes without anything dire happening to anyone. So
thanks.
I appreciate the time and enjoy the weather.
Thanks. You too. Hope you stay safe.
Me too.
Thanks for listening to the Hello World Podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to the Hello World Podcast at hwpod.com.